Just by way of review, when you think of Genesis, Genesis is the book of what? Big endings. Big endings. Beginnings. It is the beginning of creation. And we have there four main events. We've already gone over them. When you think of the book of Exodus, what should you be thinking of? An exit. An exit out of, getting out of the what land? The land of Egypt. So, and the first 18 chapters are getting out of Egypt. The rest of the book of Exodus is getting organized in worshiping God and knowing what he expects out of us. That's Exodus. And then there is, what's the third book of the Bible? Leviticus. In case you can't remember it, Leviticus, Leviticus. Whenever you think of Leviticus, there are two main things about Leviticus. What are they? Feasts and offerings. And you will find that throughout the book of Leviticus. As a matter of fact, yesterday I finished the book of Leviticus. One of the most profitable times I've ever read in the book of Leviticus. So, and by the way, why are we learning these things? So that when we're wanting you to know where you are in the Bible, so whenever a pastor has you turn somewhere, or where a Sunday school teacher has you turn somewhere, or where you're reading, you're able to fit all of this into a particular framework, so to speak. Good. Leviticus. And then we looked very briefly last week at Numbers. And you see all of those numbers are blindfolded, and they're just going in circles, and whenever you think of numbers, you need to be thinking of what? Wanderings. Wanderings. They wandered where? In the wilderness for how many years? Very good. It was 40 years. And in the book of Numbers, basically, God brings his people after about 2.5-3 years from Egypt up to the land of Canaan. And he says, you're going in. But Israel doubted and sent 12 spies in. We're going to test the land to see the best way of attack. That was their excuse. And then the 12 spies came back, and all of them said, this is a fantastic land. But 10 said, the people there are mighty, and they have chariots, and we can't do it. And 2 spies said, yes, we can do it. And the 10 spies convinced all the people, and they said, we're not going to go. And God said, okay, what you get for not trusting me is you are going to wander in this wilderness for 40 years until the generation that doesn't trust me is dead and gone. And there's a whole nother generation that will trust and believe me in my promises. So it's a book that deals with the faithfulness of God in contrast to the fickleness of human beings. And, dear friends, it's a reminder to us the difference God makes in our decision-making. We've got to bring God front and center. It's been difficult for me to do that. It's difficult for all of us in the midst of a crisis. We've got to bring God and his promises and his strength front and center of every decision-making process that we have in our entire life. Also, if you want to see the book that has Israel complaining more than any other book, guess what book that is? It's found in the book of Numbers. Manna, again. So, Numbers is wandering. Last week, we briefly explained duet, run on me. Duet, run on me. Deuteronomy is the book, Deuteronomy. And in the book of Deuteronomy, it is basically, do we remember it? It is the second law. Duet in Greek means second. Nomos in Greek means law. So it is the giving of the law the second time. And I love Deuteronomy. It is a book with a huge heart. And it's basically the last sermons of Moses, right before they go into the land of Israel. And Moses says to them, I want you to remember where you failed in the past. Now, he isn't using it as a billy club to beat them up, but he's just using it lightly. Remember where you failed in the past. Trust God. Have a heart for God. And whenever God has our heart, the outward obedience flows naturally. When he doesn't have our heart, the outward obedience doesn't go so very well. Much at all. And many people want to gripe and complain that Therefore, we ought to get rid of all of the outward obedience. I want to say I disagree with getting rid of all of the outward obedience, because we need to be working on the heart of the matter, and that is the heart of every human individual. So Deuteronomy is a book of review. So we've got, and by the way, if they keep running on that guy, he's going to have to take two tablets to get rid of his headache, right? Okay, really stupid, bad jokes. Let's review. Genesis is what? Beginnings, Exodus, exit, Leviticus, feasts and offerings, Numbers. And Deuteronomy is the second law, a book with a huge, huge heart in the middle of it. And don't forget what we've talked about concerning the Pentateuch as well. Also, now we're hitting the historical books. And in the historical books, just by way of review, what are the two main contents of the historical books? They're two L words. Not laws. That's in the Pentateuch. In the history books, it's two L words. The history books deal mainly with two L things. What are they? Leaders. That's right. The leaders, and it's the people who are led by the leaders and their what? Their land. It's the land of Israel. They're the leaders and their land. Very good. And what is the point at issue in the historical book? This is still by way of review. What is the point at issue? We've already mentioned the cognate of one of the words. What's that? It's not the land as much as the point at issue in all of the history books is its leadership. It is leadership. And what is the function of the historical books? Why is it in our Bible? To prepare us for what? To prepare us for the perfect leader, to prepare us for a perfect king. Now, let's look at the history books in kind of an outline form before we get the theme of every book. It's the history of God's people and their land and their leaders, and it's pre-exilic and post-exilic. Pre-exilic, before the exile, where God had to spank them and send them off into exile. So there are history books before the exile took place, and there's history books dealing with after the exile took place. A little four-point outline. The leader and their land. How they got their land. That's found in the book of Joshua. How they kept their land. That's Judges, 1 2 Samuel, 1 2 Kings, 1 Chronicles. How they lost their land, 2 Chronicles, and how they got their land back again. That's the post-exilic books, Ezra, Nehemiah, Esther. Does that make sense, that little four-point outline? Their land, how they got it, how they kept it, how they lost it, and then how they got it back again. Or if you want to divide it up into a different, you like an outline that's based all on the kingdom, we'll give you an outline based completely on the kingdom. And that is this one. The promised land or the promised kingdom deals with Joshua, Judges, Ruth. We're finally giving you the promised land. And then we have a united kingdom underneath a king. Saul, David, Solomon. That's in 1 and 2 Samuel, 1 Kings and 1 Chronicles. Then there is the divided kingdom. After Solomon died, the kingdom divided. And that's found in 2 Kings and 2 Chronicles. And then there is the remnant or the returning kingdom that's after the exile, and that's Ezra, Nehemiah, and Esther. Now, any questions on what I've just given there? No? Okay, let's look at them one at a time. Joshua, you see that fellow there, and he is crushing every city. When you think of Joshua, think of the one word, conquer, conquering. What is taking place? Basically, in chapters 1 through 12 is war. They're conquering all of the land. And then in chapters 13 to 24, it's peace. And they're dividing up the land among the 12 tribes of Israel there. And it's interesting, the lesson that we get out of this is victory comes by faith and obedience. We get the same victory in our lives. You and me, we are only going to have victory, dear friends, as we have trust and obedience in doing what God says. You are not going to feel close to God. You're not going to feel like you're having victory unless there is trust and obedience. You're not going to have it. So often I talk with folks in the office that in particular areas of their life, they're not walking in obedience, not with great abject rebellion, but I'm just not doing this. Okay, you're not going to feel victorious and you're not going to feel like you're walking close with God unless you're having trust and obedience. Trust and obey. There is no other way to be happy in Jesus than to trust and obey. And we learn this from the book of Joshua. So the book of Joshua, it is all about, what's the one word? C word. Conquering. Good. Conquering. The next one is judges. The judges. And if you could think cycles. Cycles with judges. It is very cyclical. Very cyclical. And you'll see that there are five cycles there. One, two, three, four, five. And here's the cycle that you'll find in the book of Judges. They're all S's. Sin, slavery, supplication, salvation, silence. Sin, God's people sin. Slavery, God puts them into slavery. They don't like slavery. They call out to God in prayer. It's a big fancy word we call supplication to make it all have S's. God hears them praying, and with a heart of compassion, he delivers them. We call that salvation, a deliverance. And then there's a period of peace, and that is a period of silence. But then when things are going well again, God's people go back into sin. And then God spanks them and puts them into slavery. And then they supplicate to God again, and God delivers them with salvation. And then there's peace again, and everything's great. But then they start sinning again, and then God puts them in slavery. You see the cycle. And it happens, you'll notice there, the number seven, it happens seven major times. Seven major times. There are lots of minor occasions. Seven major times in the book of Judges. So Judges, it is cycles. And if you would turn in Judges to chapter 21, verse 25. Judges 21, 25. They say that the key to any house is normally left near the front or the back door. The key to the book of Judges is right at the back door. And it is the very last verse, the key verse of the book of Judges. Judges 21, 25, it says, in those days there was no king in Israel, and everyone did what was right in his own eyes. Terrible, terrible thing. Leon Wood said about Judges, the book of Judges presents a picture of Israel, which contrasts markedly with the book of Joshua. Victories over enemies no longer continue. Peaceful conditions do not exist. Prosperity is not enjoyed. A high reputation among the Canaanites and the other peoples is no longer enjoyed. Israel is not the head of the neighboring countries. She is definitely the tail. The reason for the complete and tragic change was simply sin in their lives. And that's a lesson that we can learn, dear friends. We see the leaders in the book of Joshua. Joshua didn't reach the next generation. How I wish there'd be a perfect leader come along. All of the judges, all of them failed. Gideon ends up worshiping the ephod, getting the children of Israel to worship the ephod, marrying lots of women. Samson, his life was tainted throughout his entire life. None of them lasted. So, judges, cycles. Good? Third one, Ruth. Ruth, and you see, oh yeah, isn't that nice? And someone years ago, I don't know who, I think it was one of my boys, tried to put little black pants or black diapers on those cupids up there. That's why their rear ends are black. But over the years, it has come off of there, and so that's what it is. Ruth, the theme of Ruth, it is a love story. Love story. And you see, the book is on the roof. Ruth, when you think of Ruth, it is love story. When you read the book of Ruth, it is a love story about a woman who was a Moabitess, and her husband dies, and she goes with her mother-in-law, who's an Israeli, back to Israel. and she is faithful to her mother-in-law, and then there's a fellow who's a distant relative of the mom. His name is Boaz. They call him in Hebrew Bongatz, kind of a different name, so we'll call him Boaz. Boaz, who falls in love with Ruth, and through the process of what they called a kinsman redeemer back then, he buys her for himself and marries her, and she is in the lineage of Jesus Christ and the grandmother of King David, which is a wonderful thing. Ruth is a love story. As a matter of fact, G. Campbell Morgan said about the book of Ruth, and it takes place during the time of the book of Judges. Ruth is called faith in the midst of faithlessness. Ruth, a fantastic, encouraging book in the midst of all the discouraging things that are taking place in the book of Judges. Leon Morris said of Ruth, most of all, Ruth is a book about God. It deals with unimportant people and unimportant matters, but it deals with them in such a way as to show that God is active in the affairs of men. He works his purpose out and blesses them that trust in him. Boaz's babe was Ruth, right? Okay, why do I even try? The next one, what is the next book in the Bible? There's Joshua, Judges, Ruth, 1 Samuel, but in order to strike a mnemonic device, it's a 1 Sand Mule. 1 Sand Mule, we'll hopefully remember 1 Sand Mule, 1 Samuel, 1 Samuel. Basically, there's a lot of things that's taking place in 1 Samuel. There is a leader, the last of the judges, the first of the prophets. His name is Samuel, and he writes the book of Samuel, and he listens to God. Everyone else throughout Judges and even his predecessor Eli didn't listen to God, but Samuel does. But God uses Samuel to anoint the very first king of Israel. And that's that guy right there. Does anyone remember what his name is? He's Saul. See that Saul that he has? Saul, S-A-U-L is his name. Saul, notice something about his heart. What kind of a heart does he have? He has no heart. Yeah, a black heart. He has no heart for God. Whenever you think of 1 Samuel, think it is mostly about Saul, which it is mostly about Saul and his no heart for God in the midst of everything. It was said this about 1 Samuel. 1 Samuel is a book of living illustrations of great truths which span both testaments. Here we see God's faithfulness, explore the result of failure to trust God, and catch a vision of the cost and rewards of commitment. Here in vivid portraits of Old Testament believers, we find many lessons for our own important lives. Saul and his sons meet their death at the end of 1 Samuel on the top of Mount Gilboa. By the way, Saul was a lot like that mule that he has his foot on, and stubborn. But that's 1 Samuel. Then, right after 1 Samuel, we have 2 Samuel, and it is about a particular kind of Jewish person who has reddish hair. What king of Israel is that? He played the lyre, and he liked to sing. And by the way, you see he has a slingshot there. What is basically 2 Samuel all about? King David. Notice his heart. What kind of heart does he have? He does have a heart for God. Saul has no heart for God, and David has a definite heart for God. I will say, though, in 2 Samuel, it shows about David's sins, though, and his failures, but it also teaches us about real, true repentance. And I like what this says about 1 and 2 Samuel. The book of 1 Samuel records the failure of man's king, Saul. 2 Samuel describes the enthronement of God's king, David, and the establishment of the house of David through which the Messiah, Jesus Christ, eventually comes. And you know, David with the slingshot gave Goliath a piece of the rock, right? At least I'm getting a few smiles out there. So That is 2 Samuel. After 2 Samuel, what is the next book of the Bible? 1 Kings. And you'll see by looking up there, it has number 1 up at the top of the crown, and he is definitely a king. And this man, though, is surrounded by a bunch of women, but he stands out apart from them. There is no men around, so he is definitely a solo man. Or Solomon, right? Okay, oh, yeah. He's definitely a solo man. So when you think of 1 Kings, we need to be thinking of kind of two things. It is mostly about what king? Solomon. But also, notice his bag there. We need to notice some other things about Solomon. Solomon, you notice the hair around his temples is gray. He has wisdom about him. It says in the Bible, in the book of 1 Kings, Solomon had two loves, only two loves. One, he loved the Lord with all of his heart. And then in chapter 10, he loved many women. And that will drag you down. You'll notice his heart, he had a divided heart in serving God. And Solomon, because he asked God for wisdom, God also gave him riches, but because Solomon had a divided heart, the kingdom was ripped just like that bag is ripped. The kingdom, as soon as Solomon died, split in two. So when you think of First Kings, Solomon and the kingdom ripping. Solomon and the kingdom ripping, because that's exactly what takes place in First Kings as we read it there. Chapter 1 through 11 is all about Solomon, and 12 to 22 is the division. By the way, why was there a collapse? I've already mentioned it to you, but I want to hear in your own words. Why was there a collapse of the kingdom? What's that? Sin, and he had a divided heart. And any house that's divided against itself cannot stand. And dear Christian friend, if you really are a Christian, but you're going to feed your flesh and you're going to feed what you think is best and not let the Word of God dwell richly in you, there is going to be a collapse in you and in your own family. It'll happen every time. You can work hard, try to prevent it, but you'll never be able to get one up on God. You can't. I've tried. I've tried all kinds of numerous ways throughout my life. I've never been able to get one up on God. Your arms are too short to box with God. We cannot do it. So in the book of 1 Kings, James Montgomery said, Kings has for its subject not mere history, but the lessons of history. The remarkable note is that when all was lost, someone found the history of that tragic period worth recording as a lesson of God's discipline of his people. So, we just want to review just a little bit here. Saul, what kind of heart? No heart. David, what kind of heart? A whole heart. Solomon, what kind of? Half heart. And Bob has a new heart. That's not 2 Kings. That's not 2 Kings. 2 Kings. 2 Kings, you look at the visual there. You can see two kings up there on an island. And the island is called X. It is exile. There are kings. It's a king of Israel as well as the king of Judah, the two kingdoms. And it shows in 2 Kings how both of these kingdoms, numerous kings, all in the north are terrible. Some in the south are good, but all of them are eventually heading toward and spinning toward exile, away from God. God is patient with us in 2 Kings. He didn't immediately spank his children. God is patient with us, but also God does practice tough love at times. God sent prophets in 2 Kings. Elijah, he was at the end of 1 Kings, and he's at the beginning of 2 Kings, and there's Elisha and other prophets doing miracles, but they are still on a collusion course because they will not follow the Lord with all of their heart. And they end up with a completely dissolved kingdom. And Rick McNeely said this, happily the book of Kings do not complete the account of God's working with his people. The dark tones of captivity were brightened with the announcement half a millennium later that the Messiah had come. Man could have new birth, but when you read 2 Kings, you're going to be very discouraged. Now, this is a good opportunity for us to review. If you wanted to read, out of these history books we've mentioned this morning, if you wanted to read a book that was going to be encouragement and about victory and about God's people conquering, and you just wanted to read that for your devotions, what book would you probably read? Joshua, because the theme of Joshua is what? Conquering. How many of us read Judges when we really need a huge shot of encouragement and inspiration? You're not going to find it there. Now, you may find it in little pockets, something about Gideon's life, something about Samson's life, something about Jephthah's life. Jephthah has always encouraged me, always. There, someday, Lord willing, on Sunday mornings, we're going to give a series of messages on the book of Judges. And when I get to Jephthah, we're going to, that guy just fascinates me. I love him. His mom was a prostitute. Can you imagine the things he saw and heard as he was growing up? Eventually, his real dad came and ripped him away from her, and his stepbrothers and stepfamily did not treat him well. There is a whole history that this fella experienced, but God still used him in spite of his past. Friend, what is your past? What have you experienced? God can still use you in a mighty way in spite of no matter what has taken place in your past, whether happened to you or you've actually done it. God can still greatly use you as an inspiration and a deliverer of others of his people, if we will. But yeah, we don't read Judges. When we read Judges, we need to come away with one word, and that is the word what? Cycles. Good. In Ruth, it is a love story. 1 Samuel is basically about what king? Saul. 2 Samuel about David. 1 Kings is about two things, about Solomon and the dividing kingdom, the kingdom ripping. 2 Kings is about exile. They are heading toward exile. Now, we have five more, and I'm going to try to hurry here. 1 Chronicles. 1 Chronicles is an editorial. It is a review. The history books so far have been chronological. Right now, though, at 1 Chronicles, it is, you weave 1 Chronicles back into 1 Samuel, 2 Samuel, and 1 Kings. It's an editorial on the life of David. All of 1 Chronicles, basically. As a matter of fact, in 1 Chronicles, you have a genealogy that goes all the way back to Adam. But basically, 1 Chronicles is all a review of the life of David that is there. So, 1 Chronicles, editorial on David. 2 Chronicles. 2 Chronicles, it's an editorial, it's a review of not the northern kingdom of Israel, where 10 tribes split. After Solomon's death, 10 tribes went north, all of them were bad. Two tribes stayed down south. They were called Judah. Simeon was infiltrated in there in the land of Judah. And 2 Chronicles is basically about the kingdom of Judah and how they were heading toward exile. It hits the highest point. It ends with the highest point, David's reign and Solomon's reign, and it goes to their lowest ebb, and that is heading out into exile again. These kings and kingdoms there. And it was a hard lesson for them to learn. You don't worship and serve idols. So, those are the pre-exilic, all the books in history that in the Bible that take place before the exile. The exile takes place, and now we have three historical books that take place after the 70 years of exile. Remember, God spanked them for 70 years, the 70-year Babylonian captivity? And now, in the post-exilic three books, we have the people returning. So, Ezra, here's what I want you to think about when you think of Ezra. You see Ezra, Ezra. Ezra, building the temple and building the people. Really, it's getting people to rejoice in building the temple. But in order to build the temple, they had to build the people and to get them to rejoice in actually building the temple. So it's people rejoicing in building the temple. I know it's a long one. People rejoicing. But you look at the picture, you can figure out people to rejoice in building the temple. And in Nehemiah there, the temple is built back in Jerusalem. Homes are being built back in Jerusalem. But the wall that protects Jerusalem had not been built. And so Nehemiah comes back and builds the what around Jerusalem? Builds the wall. He builds the wall, helps the people. He helps build the people to build the wall around Jerusalem that's there. And as with Ezra, Nehemiah faces opposition and the trip back and all kinds of difficulties, but God brings victory in the end. And then the last of the historical books. And boy, I'm just flying over these things. Esther. The book of Esther. She is, just remember this, she did not come back. By the way, Nehemiah didn't either. It took him quite a while. It took Ezra quite a while. It took quite a lot of people a long time. Can I give one? I hardly ever say very much negative. I always want to try to be positive. There is one particular preacher who's very famous these days who has a series of sermons that he's preached recently on the book of Esther. You should not listen to one of them. So if you start listening to a sermon series on Esther, would you check it out with me first? I'm going to probably say yes, because there's all kinds of fantastic stuff that's out there, but there is one that is very popular. He has made it incredibly perverted, incredibly twisted, and it is a twisting of Scripture. And this man is well respected, even for writing books. Esther, though, is the queen of Persia. You see the Persian rug and the Persian cat there. When you think of Esther, she's the queen of Persia. And as she's in Persia, you see God do all kinds of incredible things in using her and her guardian, Mordecai, in sparing the Jewish people who stayed back in Persia. An amazing, amazing story that really highlights the providence of God. So we have just flown here, and I'm sorry to have flown, but we need to review just real quickly. And so Joshua is about what? Conquering. Judges is about the cycles. Can you remember the five S's there? We don't have time to go over them. Sin, slavery, supplication, salvation, and silence. And then there is the book of Ruth, and it is a love story. What's the next book? 1 Samuel, and it is basically about King Saul, who has no heart for God. 2 Samuel is about David, who has a whole heart for God. 1 Kings is about Solomon, who has and the kingdom splitting, who has half a heart for God. 2 Kings is about all the rest of the kings heading toward where? Exile. 1 Chronicles is an editorial on whose life? David. 2 Chronicles is an editorial on what nation? Judah. And Ezra gets the people to rejoice in building what? The temple. Nehemiah is about building the wall around Jerusalem. And Esther, when you think of that, think of what? She is the queen of Persia, but also think of the God who rules over all and who works in the book of Esther. Thank you. Sorry that we're late. We'll pray, and Lord willing, we'll hit the poetry section and review next week. Father, thank you for this time. Lord, I pray that you would help us whenever we turn into your word, that we would be able to fit things into a frame well. We ask in your Son, Jesus' name. Amen.